Welcome. You're listening to Refusing to Implode Politely, a show all about London spoken word, with me, Zoe Stegosaurus.
If the sky were orange. If the sky were orange, the sea would be Fanta bright. In the deep, glowy sea, jellyfish would pulsate like light bulbs made of silk. If the sky were orange, so would the Twitter icon. Labels on water bottles, sleeping pills. If the sky were orange, starry night would be all apricot swirls. If the sky were orange, he would pick you up in that pumpkin-painted pickup truck and he would tell you, you look great, with an ellipsis before the great. He would tell you, you're not like other girls. No, wearing orange is such a cliché these days. If the sky were orange, he would open the truck's door for you and drive, dangerously fast, the window a Monet, and when he changed the gear to park, you would tell yourself you love him, across from a blue sunset.
So, hi, Felix. Welcome down to Camden Community Radio. We're about to share a wonderful interview about your spoken word pieces that you've recorded for us. Could you just give us a brief introduction to you and your work?
Hi, I'm Felix. I'm 18 years old. I've been performing and writing slam poetry for about 10 months now. So not that long in terms of how most people who come to the slam poetry events are, but...
You've come leaps and bounds in that time.
Yep.
Even since I met Felix, when was it, 6 weeks ago, eight weeks ago, something like that, and what I've heard him perform versus what has happened in the studio today, you know, there's been some, I don't know, I would say some development, I would call it. Let's start with the basics. So you say you've been writing poetry 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been performing for that whole time?
Pretty much, actually. I wrote my first slam poem the night before I went out to perform it, which is actually the first time that I'd witnessed any slam poetry live. Pretty daring move on my part.
Yes, indeed.
I basically started at the same time. I think I wrote to perform. So
you say you wrote it the night before you went out to perform it. That it sounds almost like you set yourself a personal challenge in that.
I think so. Yeah.
And did you plan at that point to go to more performances and go on performing?
Well, when I went. I think it was I was going to go and just see how it was and then decide if I was going to continue with it. But the first gig that I went to was really sweet and everyone was really nice to me. So I thought I would keep going.
Great. And what was that first gig?
It was at the Poetry Cafe, Poetry Unplugged.
Love it.
So in Covent Garden, really nice underneath the cafe. With this beautiful big white sheet with the stencil acrylic paint of Poetry Unplugged in the background. And I was actually not the youngest person there, which is unusual for me. So it was, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, really friendly night, that one.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I love it. Lovely crowd. And it's always rammed. Always rammed.
Yeah, we had to stand. There weren't any seats.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I'm glad it kept you coming back.
Yeah.
And so do you make... Do you make that a regular feature of your poetry performance kind of circuit? Or do you kind of start there and then springboard onto different things?
No, I went there one or few times. But then I think I got more stuck into Spoken Word London, which is in Dalston.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that the standard there is like slightly higher just because I think Poetry Unplugged is more for, I don't know, beginners and like... It's a lot friendlier. Is it a lot friendlier? It's a lot more accessible, I guess, for people who are just starting out. Whereas I think if I had gone to Dalston the first time, it would have been very intimidating with all these really good poets.
It's funny. It's funny, actually, because I think different poetry nights have a very different flavour.
Mm.
And although I know that a lot of the people at Unplugged have been doing it for years and they've won, like, slam championships and things like that, it still has that lovely cozy feel of like the first time, whereas spoken word was a bit more kind of like right on your feet, do something amazing. So yeah, I know what you mean there. Well, this is an interesting question. Do you think of yourself as a poet?
what else would I think of myself as?
Nice. Is it something that you don't really think a great deal about and it's something that you do in the background? Or do you kind of go, right, no, this is an identity I'm taking on. I am a poet. This is what I do.
I think it's quite difficult, actually, to describe yourself as a poet, especially to other people, because they immediately think that you're a sort of written down poet.
Mm.
And I think you kind of have to put the words spoken word before poet in order for people to really understand like who you are and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I do think it's quite a big part of my identity and how I see myself.
Great. So, I mean, you mentioned putting spoken word in front, just to kind of clarify for people.
Yeah.
For you, what does that do? What's the difference between calling yourself a poet and calling yourself a spoken word poet?
Most of the time it means people don't think you're as pretentious. Because if you describe yourself as a written poet, I don't know, it has a lot of sort of stuffy connotations.
Mm.
But spoken word, I think, adds a bit of a political flavour to it.
Mm.
Because that's that whole culture around it that is surrounding like social activism. And I don't know, it just seems a little, it's just a different culture, I think.
Mm, yeah, I think I can get behind that. Actually, you've just brought to my mind something that I had enjoyed at the time and then quickly filed away and forgotten, which was, I wonder if this ever happens to you. When you introduce yourself as a spoken word poet, do people ever say to you, right, okay, do a poem? Which is what happened to me at a ticket counter at Victoria Station last Saturday. The guy was like, you've got a good name. And I was like, yeah, it's a performance name. He was like, you perform? What do you perform? Spoken word? Do a poem. So I'm just standing there at the ticket counter, like, rapping one out for him. It was a bit mad. But, yeah, has that kind of thing happened to you? Or is it just me?
Yeah, no, that's never happened to me. But I think that happens to really a lot of artists. Like,
yeah.
If you're an artist, you know, drawing, then people are like, oh, draw me. Or if you're a singer, they're like, sing us a song. I don't know, people kind of need proof of it.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yes. That's it, isn't it? It's a kind of, it's impress me.
Mm.
Which is actually not the attitude of most of the spoken word nights that you go to around London, which is quite nice. It's a bit more friendly. We're now going to take a quick pause to hear a couple more of Felix's poems.
Ultimate compression tri-top chest binder size medium, a love story. Zip me back into my skull, be the muzzle on my muffled heart as I stand in cold silence in a hot lit theatre and hear them tell me they thank me for my audition, tell me they sympathise with my situation, tell me Danny Zuko cannot possibly be played by a girl pretending to be a boy. Well, I am sick to my chest of pretense, of girls pretending to be boys, of boys pretending to be girls pretending to be boys, of words that pretend to be more than warm pennies weighing me down through the palms of my hands. All I wanted was to act, and all they have ever given me was pretense. My mother does not know my name. We sit at the breakfast table together like children at school desks, and I pray she does not hear the dry coughs of a daughter's ghost condensing at the base of my throat like stolen cologne from my father's medicine cabinet. I think there is a ghost in my lung. We have never met. She is my Prometheus. She perches on my lower left rib, having called shotgun on my body 18 years ago. But you are my car crash strap. You can wrap an elastic band around the half-second lag between the mirror and me, and you can trap me in your hard white shell of stillness so I can finally breathe. In, breathe in, breathe in. An apology to his best friend. When you gave me that beaded dress that cost twice my bank account for my birthday last year, I'm sorry if my thank you didn't seem genuine. You see, I've been having issues with facially reacting, and despite practicing, my performance was somewhat lacking due to the tremolo in my chest at the thought of receiving a dress and not a tie like I wanted. I'm sorry I didn't make myself clear. Words can be confused, misconstrued. Statements like I'm a dude can be perplexing. I understand if you didn't catch my meaning like my breath did in my throat when you told me I looked great in that dress. I'm sorry that objectively you were right. I'm sorry that I never wore it again out of spite, and now it replaces me in the closet, worth more than my entire tie collection, a displaced waste of regret and space. I'm sorry you didn't sign up for this. I'm sorry you didn't know what you were getting into. I wish I could have warned you before you double pinky swore to be best friends forever with that pigtailed kid in year three. And I'm sorry she grew up to be me.
Poetic inspirations. Can you tell me a little bit about why you got into writing spoken word poetry, and if there are any poets particularly that kind of made you think, right, I want to try that?
Well, I started out by, I think it was a recommended video on YouTube or something, of The Nutritionist by Andrea Gibson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just kind of fell in love. I really love her work. I love, like, the anger behind it. I love the sounds that she chooses. And I don't know, I really like the rhythm that she does when she sort of goes, she piles on the words and then suddenly she, like, sort of steps away. And I don't know, everything seems all echoey.
So do you find yourself taking on any elements of her style in your work, or is it not, it's not that kind of inspiration?
I try. It's difficult to try to quantify how much inspiration you get from someone because of, like, particular stylistic techniques or just general vibes.
Yeah.
Because I think that's sort of the main thing, but it's very difficult to, like, describe that in actual words.
Can you tell me about whether you find writing in groups helpful? Have you ever been part of writing collectives? And what do those do for you and for your work?
Well, I was on a trip to Yorkshire, actually, to the Arvon Centre with a bunch of people from my high school. And we just spent a week in isolation in the Yorkshire moors writing poetry together, which was really nice.
It sounds amazing.
But I think the main thing about writing groups for me is not necessarily getting inspiration or ideas or anything from other people, but mostly motivation. And saying, okay, this is where we're all going to sit down and write. And so it doesn't feel so, I don't know, alone and weird that you're just, I don't know, putting some time to yourself to write, but more like you're part of a group of people who have all decided to do this quite bizarre thing of just writing in middle of nowhere with no internet.
No internet as well.
Mm.
That's the bizarrest thing. But the writing, the writing too. That's really cool. And how did being in Yorkshire for that shape it? Did you interact a lot with the wildness of Yorkshire at all?
At the time, we were studying Ted Hughes and Sylvia Plath. So being at Hepton Stall, where Ted Hughes grew up and where he based a lot of his poetry, was really interesting.
Mm.
We took a lot of long walks.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. I'm just like, I just love Yorkshire, so I was just wondering if anyone else loved Yorkshire. I certainly do. Great. No, it sounds like a really, really nice weekend. Was it a weekend? Was
week.
It a week?
Whole week.
Week.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm. How much came out of that for you? Did you produce quite a lot of work?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, I managed to. I mostly got a lot of short poems, but then I managed later when I got back and sort of was back in, I don't know, my normal state of mind and normal context of writing, I managed to expand on them.
And are those pieces still things that feature in your performance today, or have you kind of cast them aside?
Actually, in the first slam poem I ever wrote, I have the very last part of it was originally its own poem that I had written in Yorkshire. And then it was when I got back to London, had a few experiences, decided to write the rest of it, that I actually managed to make a whole slam poem out of it. So it was originally written word, that last bit. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it kind of evolved into, or maybe evolved is an unfair term to use, but it developed into something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. That sounds good. So it's not so much making use of the group, but making use of the kind of the space and the time.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it could be a touchy topic for some people, but how important is publication? How important do you think it is to be in print in the kind of poetry that you write?
I don't think it's very important at all.
Mm.
mostly because I think that writing slam poetry down onto a page is quite reductive, and you don't get the full experience. You don't understand how it's supposed to sound. I don't know. I just feel like it's going to a musical and just wearing a blindfold, you know?
Mm.
You just don't get the full experience out of it. And also, I think that there are other ways that slam poets manage to get their work out there, like through YouTube videos, through audio clips, through just going to a lot of venues and getting known that way. And I think that publication isn't held as such... it's not heralded as a sort of like badge of honour in the spoken word community, whereas it might in, you know, the written word poetry community, if they have a community.
They're out there, guys.
No disrespect.
So I know what you mean. Can you talk a bit about in what ways you focus on performance and any elements of performance that you bring into your work that are separate from just, you know, creating the words on the page?
Well, when I write my poems, to start with, I memorize the lines in my head before I write them down. So they all start out as something auditory, even if they're just sort of my imagined voice speaking them in my mind. And then when I'm rehearsing to actually perform, I often put little sort of apostrophes where I want to breathe, and I draw arrows where I want the line breaks to zoom into each other, zoom enjambment into each other.
Nice.
So if you actually were to read my slam poems, they probably would look like a bit of a mess. And
so there's actually quite a lot of, you know, even down to the point of where you take a breath.
Yeah.
This kind of thing. So it's, that's all kind of part of the process.
Yeah. I think a lot of slam poets decide to make the line breaks where they take breaths or put commas, but I tend to try and make my poem look good on the page, and then I decide, and then I figure out where it was that I thought the line breaks and enjambment would go. So, I think a lot about my line breaks, but then I just ignore them when it comes to actually performing them, and no one knows what my line breaks look like. So,
where you've decided to kind of take your breaths or put emphasis, whatever, in your performance, does that often change over time? Once you've performed it a few times, you kind of accidentally do something different, then you're like, oh, that worked really well.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Often it's just because when I'm on stage and I'm really scared, I run out of breath a lot easier than if I'm just in my bedroom. So, I tend to take a few more breaths then.
Well, thank you so much for telling us all about your work. It was really, really fantastic chatting to you, and really, really interesting stuff. We'll leave you with the final piece that Felix has recorded for us.
To the people who count. No, nothing as sentimental as that. To the people who count, assigning experiences to fingertips and Tesco's vegetables to the rooms of a house. To the people who remember. To the people who tie tent guy lines to high tide, separate punch lines with plus signs. To the people who count, count, count. To the people who remember. To the people who count the sticky smell of spilt white wine. No, I'm fine. The taste of brine, flashing lights. Not this time. To the people who count, 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 count. And the people who remember.